You're listening to the AfterBuzz TV Network, now the largest new media platform on the web, and your number one source for after-show entertainment.
Very good, Dean
Johnson.
From the AfterBuzz Studios in Los Angeles, California, presented by Maria Menounos and Bing.com, and streaming live thanks to Akamai Technologies, this is AfterBuzz TV's WWE Monday Night Raw After Show. We'll break down tonight's episode and get you all the latest news and gossip. If you'd like to buzz in on tonight's show, you can buzz us at 424-256-1729. That's 424-256-1729. And now, another post-game wrap-up show for your favorite TV show. It's AfterBuzz TV's WWE Monday Night Raw After Show.
Yeah.
There it goes. The music hits. Bernie, Bernie, Bernie. It's AfterBuzz TV, a special edition show. We're not buzzing after Raw, but AfterBuzz is Jericho, a living legend of the ring. Here joining us on the couch, the first unified world champ. For that, he's no slouch. ECW, WCW, and WWE. One of the most popular sports entertainers you could see on your TV. He says he's the best in the world at doing what he does, and we're so fortunate to have him on the buzz. I'm Ryan Katz, and I'm joined by my team of Ryan, Josh, and Kathy, and we're picking up steam, improving your day. It's time to flip those frowns and put a smile on your face as we break the wall down. With that being said, it's time to start the show by welcoming our guest, Y2J, Chris Jericho.
Yeah.
Welcome to AfterBuzz TV, Mr. Jericho.
When I heard that introduction, I thought it was going to be bad, but after hearing it and seeing your mustache, now I'm just sad.
Yes! The first kiss of the evening!
Woo!
Man, well, I was going to go pull out my old favorite WCW t-shirts from when I was a child and as a fan, and I was looking for my Jericho t-shirt, but I found my Hoovy t-shirt instead that I was going to put on. No, I'm just kidding. But I did. I found my original 15 years old probably Monday
yes.
Night Jericho.
Wow.
Jericho-holics Anonymous.
Wow. I had to design that shirt myself because when I was in WCW, Eric Bischoff, who was the boss at the time, I said, I want to get a t-shirt. He said, you don't make any money off t-shirts. And I said, yeah, but it's perception. You know, if you have a t-shirt, it like, shows that you're somebody.
Absolutely.
And he goes, well, you want to think of something, do it. So I went to the guy, got the design. We got this printed up on our own. I'm not sure if they ever even sold it.
Yeah, I got it from Media Relations when I was hosting a radio show back in college. So I don't know if it
was. Bargain basement, man.
Exactly. And I always wondered if I got like a bad print because I have no idea what that squiggly symbol is at the bottom.
I think it's supposed to be the TNT logo that's been smashed under the weight of the Jericho. But yeah, it's not a bad print. It was just bad quality.
It's got to be a collector's item now, right?
Absolutely.
It's probably worth like $1,000.
I don't even have one of those.
Really?
Yeah, I don't. And when I sat down here, I was sitting here, and you feel like you're on the interrogation. Like, what's the answer, Jericho? All the guys are over here. And, like, you're
and
even,
we're just looking.
And you're even sitting
elevated.
You're elevated. Yeah, exactly. And I'm just sitting here all by myself, and then I'm looking across at this AfterBuzz TV logo, and I'm like, wait a second. I know that guy.
You do know that guy.
Is that there all the time, or just because I'm sitting here?
Special edition graphic that I put together a few hours ago.
I thought you were going to say that that's the epitome of
it's always there.
It's
always there.
All right. Well, that's okay then.
I mean, as we're getting
it's
into
our
this,
new logo. How do you like that?
You should keep it. It looks good.
It does look good.
I love it.
Nondescript.
Obviously, you're here today to talk about Robot Combat League, and we're going to get into that because new show coming up on Sci-Fi, and we'll get into that in the interview. But being a wrestling podcast, our friends want to talk wrestling, of course, or our fans. I want to bring up one of my favorite Jericho moments real quick. I was going through highlights as we were setting up for this interview, and I watched the highlight of you in a steel cage with Tyson Kidd. Tyson Kidd went for a Super Rana on the top, and you stopped it, landed on your feet, and landed in the lion tamer. I just got to say, whoa. What kind of trust goes into it? I mean, Kid has to have amazing trust of you, and then you of him. To me, I mean, he could have dropped on his head, broken his neck. It was so awesome looking is all I got to say
you
with
know,
that.
It's funny because, and this is when you've been doing this for a long time, I vaguely, possibly, maybe remember that. And I think I was wearing dress pants and dress shoes at the time because the match was like put together last minute and I was there in a suit and then I had to wrestle in a suit. But yeah, it's like I kind of remember that. I've done that move a few times. But yeah, I mean that's what wrestling is. You have to have trust in each other completely. Like if you're dancing, Dance with the Stars or figure skating or any type of a stunt routine, you have to have total trust in the guy that you're working with because you're giving him your body. And if there's any kind of carelessness or sloppiness, you not only could you hurt yourself, you could really hurt the guy that you're in there with. So you really have to have that trust no matter what it is you're doing, especially when you're doing moves like that, which are very very acrobatic and also have a real dangerous edge to it as well. Yeah. So there's a real trust when you're in the ring with somebody for sure.
I mean, you're known and synonymous for returns and big comebacks. You've actually done an amazing job of carving out this niche for yourself in this business where the comebacks almost become your thing, the surprise return. What made you decide to come back for this run going on right now? I mean, you've been gone, you're working on, you got your band, you got tour, you got all these TV shows and things going on and projects. What made you decide you wanted to do one more run? Or I shouldn't even say one more, but another run in WWE.
Money. No, I'm just kidding. I mean, for the last maybe probably 10 years or so, but even when I first started wrestling, I never considered myself just a wrestler. I've always considered myself to be an entertainer, first and foremost. I mean, when I first started wrestling when I was 19, everyone said, well, you're too small, you'll never do it. And I never really, listened to that. But I thought, okay, if I'm not going to be the biggest guy on the show, I can have the biggest personality and the biggest character and the biggest persona. So I've always kind of looked at it that way, and then over the years, I kind of branded myself into doing a bunch of different things if I feel that I can do it. I always wanted to be in a rock band and a wrestler when I was a kid, so I worked on that. Obviously, acting is an offshoot of wrestling, radio show, writing books, hosting, game shows or whatever. So I think it's important to, especially in this day and age, it's all about branding yourself.
Right.
And so I've been doing that, but still, I mean, I love the WWE. I love wrestling. It's where I kind of got my stripes, so I'll always come back. Even if it's just for a couple months at a time when I have holes in my schedule. And I've kind of got the respect level and the legacy level where I'm one of the few guys that can do that.
Yeah. Mm-hmm.
But I'm only going to do it, and I was joking money-wise, not for the money. I'm only going to do it if I still enjoy it and if I feel like I can perform to the standards that I've set for myself. Not what anybody else says, what I think and what I feel. And right now I feel great. I think I've been working some of the best. I think this past month has been one of my best months ever. And it's good to know that you still can go in there and do it. But when I start feeling maybe a little bit too sore or slowing down, then I have all these other cool things that I'm working on as well. But for right now, I'll still always kind of come in and out because I love it. That's the reason why.
And you've been able to make a connection with the fans that's different with a lot of other guys. Because when Rock came back last year, fan response, or at least Smart Mark fan response online, was, oh, I can't believe he's back, or he's taking away paydays from other wrestlers, this and that. Even when you come on limited runs based on your schedules, you're saying you never get that response from the crowd. It's always like, well, they should give Jericho the belt. He should be in main event feuds. Like, they just don't care that you do that you go and do your other projects. I think it's a respect thing of what you're doing, too.
I think the difference is, and nothing against what Rock does or Brock or any of those guys, but when I come back, I don't just come back for Monday Night Raw. And that's, I mean, I'll do the house shows. I think this month we were in Springfield, Missouri, and then Cape Girardeau, Missouri, like these little towns. But that's part of it for me. When I come back, I don't want to just be, I'll work three Raws and a pay-per-view. It's got to be, for whatever time frame I'm there, I'll work as many shows as they have. And I think that's the difference. I'm working every week on Raw, working on SmackDown, working all the pay-per-views. It's not just like a match or two. And I think that might have a lot to do with it, because when I come back, I'm coming back for the right reasons, not just to be on TV and get the hype or the glory. I'll work, the smallest shows as well, because I want to help the younger guys that are still learning. And there's a lot of younger guys that are learning, because there's not a lot of experience. You can't teach experience.
Right,
either you
time.
Have it or you don't. So that's one thing that I have, that I can show a few little tips and a few little tricks here and there. But to be able to do that, you have to see all sides of the coin, not just on Raw, not just on WrestleMania, but on all the other shows that we do as well.
Is there a different style of wrestling on house shows versus TV, or you just go out and give it 100% every time?
No, I mean, you always give 100%, but obviously house shows, you have a little bit more fun. House shows are live events, non-televised. Mm-hmm. So you can take your time a little bit more, work on your character a little bit more, not have somebody screaming in your ear, you got 3 minutes left, go home, go home. You just feel it and just have fun with it. And people, I think, when they come to the live events, they appreciate it because it's a different side of the coin. There's not as much pomp and circumstance and the lasers and the bombs. That's just for TV. But it's more the character-driven stuff. And it's a little bit more fun because it's laid back.
I was going to say, it probably gives you a little bit more time to do what you love and get. And you got into wrestling because you love to wrestle, and that's a little bit more time to work out a match.
Just entertain, man. You know, that's what it's all about. You know,
and we had I think it was 2 weeks ago, you had that like amazing match with CM Punk on Raw, and I think it was the WWE Active thing, how did that work? Well, was that legit? Like, did you know you were going to go out wrestling ahead of time? Or?
And here's the funny thing about it: when I showed up that day, they mentioned there was going to be. WWE Active.
WWE Active,
so
I think.
Yeah, the fans would vote
right
who CM Punk was going to wrestle. Three choices, me, Randy Orton, and Mysterio. And I had just came back the week before. So I guess they had something called a flash poll. They put it up during the week, and like, if you had these three choices, who would you vote for? And I guess the majority was for Randy Orton in this small little flash poll. So when I showed up at work on Monday, they were like, okay, you're going to be wrestling Wade Barrett tonight. They're going to have this active thing, but Orton's probably going to win because he won the flash poll. And I was like, seriously? Like, we're not even going to wait and see what happens? Like, well, no, he won the flash poll. And I'm thinking, flash poll? Like, what does that even mean? Like, I just came back.
Right.
I just worked CM Punk for 4 months last year with a different dynamic. He was the good guy, I was the bad guy.
Right.
No, vice versa. Mm-hmm. I said, if I was a fan, I would like to see this match just because it's fresh, it's
absolutely
new. But,
yeah, that's what I thought, too.
All right, okay, guys, if Orton's going to win, then fine. So I put together this match with Barrett, and the whole time I saw Punk, I was like, well, what if it doesn't work out that way? And he's like, well, I totally think you're going to win. I think, well, I think I'm probably going to win, too. But let's not waste time going over anything. We'll just see what happens. And lo and behold, it was like Orton. And the winner is Jericho by 60% of the vote. I went to the writer's room. I went, all you guys in your flash polls, go F yourselves. You can suck it.
Tremendous.
So we had like 40 minutes to put that together.
Wow.
And had a great match. But, you know, at the experience level that we have and the amount of times we've worked together, it's cool to know that you can just go out there and do that.
Yeah.
So it was great, man. It was a really cool night for sure.
Yeah. All the top stars have been putting on pay-per-view quality matches on Raw this last couple of months. Mm-hmm. I mean, kudos to everyone because you guys have been on fire.
Well, I mean, it's one of the reasons why I wanted to come back at this time of year because it's WrestleMania season from Royal Rumble to Mania. Mm-hmm. It's always like the funnest time of year. It's kind of like I came back and got my dessert without having to eat my meat and potatoes just by coming back at this point. But there's always a little bit more of a buzz and a little bit more of a vibe, and the fans are more into it, and the crowd's a little bit more excited and a little bigger because they know something special is happening. Mm-hmm. So I had no problems. I was like, you know what? We had a nice like 3 month period off from Fozzy. I just finished doing Robot Combat League, so it was like a perfect time to come in and you know enjoy some of this vibe that's going on right now.
Cool. Last year, Save Us Y2J, when you made that comeback, the lights dropped. You came onto the stage, and you had a fancy lighted jacket that you've been wearing, a new version that you're wearing nowadays. What was the inspiration behind that jacket?
I always wanted to be like the Paul Stanley of wrestling when I was first starting. Like I wanted to be like the ultimate front man, lead singer that's kind of the party host and commands the crowd. So I always like... That's why rock and roll and wrestling have always been so intertwined for me because they come from the same place, which is connecting with the crowd and having them pumped up and being excited to see you. So whenever I come back, I try and think of something different and change things up a bit. So I just had this idea. I saw somebody was wearing something made of it. It was called distressed leather. So I just Googled distressed leather Los Angeles and then found this designer. His name was Jonathan Logan. Went to visit him in the fashion district and didn't know anything about the guy. He knew nothing about me. Mm-hmm. Just kind of met, started talking, and kind of told him what I was looking for, but I didn't really have any ideas. And then he said, well, I got a couple ideas because I showed him a jacket that Alice Cooper had worn that had like studs all down the sleeve. And he's like, well, I got to do a couple other things first, but then I'll you know, work on this. And I said, what are you doing? He's like, well, I'm making all of David Lee Roth's stuff. And I just finished making all of Justin Bieber's stuff. And I'm making all of Alicia Keys' stuff. And it's like, turns out this guy makes things like all of Brad Pitt stuff for any movie. Like, he's like top
the
end
guy.
Hollywood guy. And it's what a strange thing to just be like kind of thrown together. And I always wanted to be like the Paul Stanley or David Lee Roth of wrestling. And here I am now, unbeknownst, meeting the guy who makes his gear. So then I started thinking about it. I was like, well, what else you got? And he's like, well, I just made this thing for Alicia Keys. She did a DJ set in, you know, Ibiza or something. And it had like these lights on the jacket that were flashing. I was like, oh, I like that. Can we put the lights onto the Alice Cooper jacket? And then that's how it all kind of started. And once again, I mean, it's something that's never been done before. So those little wires, and they snap all the time. So I'm constantly having to take them. Like, the WWE prop guys are like, you got to pay us royalties on all the, on this jacket. Like, you know, every week I got to take it in. This wire, and it's not a lot of work. It's just, there's so many wires.
Is it battery operated?
It's battery operated, but it's like Christmas lights. There's the lights all in it, and each one is connected. But if one of the lights breaks, the whole stream goes down. And because I have to carry it with me and fold it and unfold it, I can't just leave it in a wardrobe case because I never know where I'm going to be.
Right.
It snaps. So and then actually for WrestleMania last year, I got a crazier one made that had like four times the amount of lights that the original one had. And right before I went out, I turned it on, and the whole freaking right side was out. And this is like literally 2 minutes before I have to go to the ring. So I was furious. Like, I could have given, you know, a crap about the match. All I cared about was my stupid jacket. So I walked to the ring, and if like the camera is always this way, I was kind of like, I would turn and walk like backwards. And then when I got to the ring, I kind of cheated this way because I didn't want anyone to see that the whole right side of my jacket had gone out, you know? And that's like, it's like I said, it was just so funny. Like, that threw my whole, like, ah! And then I went back, I'm so angry at you. I want a refund. And like, just, we're sorry, we'll fix it. So then, you know, so anyways, it's very, and then these things were like, and people was like, I want one. Like, this costs more than like my first three cars combined.
It's funny you bring up the price because there's a local wrestler out here named the Hobo who was extremely inspired by that jacket, and I think it was even the week after it debuted he showed up at a show with his version of what he made. Took an old sport coat, covered it with a newspaper duct tape so it's got fringes, and then wired his own Christmas lights, and he's doing it, and he was the one who asked me. He wanted to know about the designer and your inspiration.
You know, when I think of hobos, I think of lighted jackets. Yeah. they're all over the streets in East LA. It's crazy.
All right, another thing different on this return is an arm full of ink. That's new.
Yeah. I mean, I didn't really say I'm going to go back to WWE with lots of tattoos. It's like I've always kind of liked tattoos. I just never really had any good ideas. And then, you know, we've been on tour with Fozzy since August. You know, everybody in bands has tattoos all over the place. And I just started getting ideas and thought it'd be cool to kind of put some stuff on and, you know, stuff that means something to me. And whether I get more or not, I don't know. But it was something I always kind of wanted to do, and now's the time to do it, right?
Sweet.
Weren't you making fun of CM Punk for having tattoos at WrestleMania last year?
The original plan was I was going to tattoo him.
Oh, really?
Yeah, and then at the last minute, Vince McMahon didn't want to do it. And that's when we came up with the whole, you know, your dad's an alcoholic type thing. But yeah, the original plan was I was going to tattoo my name, my initials, on him. And then,
were you physically going to hold the needle?
Yeah, I was going to do
it. Oh, my God.
I was going to take lessons and then do it, you know. But then Vince was like, he's got so many tattoos, it wouldn't matter. And obviously, from a guy who doesn't have any ink, didn't understand that every tattoo you got means something to you, no matter how frivolous it seems to other people.
Right.
But yeah, the original, I never really went off on his tattoos. I think maybe just
a little
briefly.
Bit. Yeah.
But the plan was I was going to tattoo him.
Oh, wow.
That's what I wanted to do. But then the boss at the last minute went, no, it's a terrible idea.
Since you brought up that match and that feud, I was going to say, was there ever a time where you felt uncomfortable in that feud attacking the
no.
It's wrestling and it's just fun.
It's show business, man. You know, did Anthony Hopkins feel uncomfortable eating somebody's liver with a fine Chianti?
It's not
really Anthony Hopkins. It's not really Hannibal Lecter. It's just him playing the part. And that's the same for me. And people that got upset about it, that's the reason why. It's the same people that got upset when I punched Shawn Michaels' wife in the mouth. You know, that's why you do those things. We're all in on it, and we're doing it to create a reaction and to you know, get people to buy tickets to see us. So,
absolutely.
And I know it's something that was close to people's hearts, and I know it's something that a lot of people struggle with, and that's why we did it.
And Punk was okay with you tattooing him Y2J?
Oh, he's fine with it, yeah.
That's awesome.
and fine with the fact that his father really had, you know, some alcohol issues in the past. That, you know, to me, that was even more something that we, like, Vince was describing that. I was like, well, are you sure Punk is cool with this? Like, let's ask him first before we say, like, this is what we're doing.
That makes it so much more powerful, though, when you know it's real.
Yeah, and it's got to be personal. Mm-hmm. I mean, anything you do in wrestling, if it's a personal issue, people will respond to it. Like I mentioned, you know, punching his wife, it, you know, actually did kind of hit her harder than we were supposed to. Just, but I mean, I'm not laughing about it. Just we were both felt so bad, but she was fine. And in the back end, that was one of the most successful storylines I ever had. And the reason why we even came up with the idea is like anybody that's in the crowd going, well, you know, wrestling is just a show, but that, you know, that dude hit. If someone hit my woman, I would kill them no matter what, you know, and it really brought out a lot of visceral, primal emotions that really made that angle go to a whole different level. And you know, that's when you can strike on something like that. It doesn't happen often, but when you get something that people really, really believe, then you know you have something that's going to, you know, make money, as we say in the business.
Bring the people in.
Yeah.
All right. Another thing on this return, man. You've returned in amazing shape. I mean, it's crazy when I pull out this T-shirt and realize this is 15 years old, that I've been watching for that long, because you look young as can be, how your career has been going for that long.
Yeah.
But you came back, and I got to say, probably the shape of your life.
Yeah, I mean, thanks. I think you're right. Like, what happened was a bunch of different things. I'll tell the story since you asked. I think it was 2010. It was my son's, I think, sixth birthday party. I was drinking beer all day, eating chicken fingers all day. Hey, a party. I got on the scale, and I was 230 pounds, like 229. And I was like, this has got to stop. I'm getting too big. So I stopped. I haven't drank a beer since then. And I decided to start, you know, kind of dieting a bit, but cutting out, like, a lot of that stuff. Then I started doing Dancing with the Stars.
Right.
And that's something, like, when you hear, like, oh, dancing, like, whatever. And they asked me to do it three times. The first time, I was, like, not interested. Second time, I think we had a Fozzy tour going on. I'm like, listen, you can't ask me to do this 2 weeks before. They call me back 2 weeks later and say, listen, the next season starts in 6 months. Will you do it? And I thought, you know, if I don't do this now, they're never going to call me again. And why shouldn't I try it? You know, I'm pretty close to Stacey Keibler, and I was asking her, and she's like, I'm the one who's been pushing these guys. You got to try it. Most fun you ever had. So, okay, cool. You start getting into it, and, you know, Maria will tell you this. You do it 7 hours a day, 7 days a week. Wow. You might get one day off, but that was the schedule. And if you want to be good, you have to put in that time. There's no screwing around.
You have to commit.
You have to commit. So I started really kind of losing weight from that. Then the very last show was like you come back for the final, and I did this routine with Cheryl Burke, my partner, where I grabbed her and I spin her around in a circle and then just toss her down the floor. And when I tossed her, I could feel like this, like something was wrong. Next week we had a Fozzy gig, and I was on stage, and suddenly like this saw blade pain, and singing high notes hurt, and sneezing hurt, and taking deep breaths. I had herniated a disc. Mm. And I'm sure it wasn't just from Dancing with the Stars. I'm sure 20 years of wrestling didn't help. But I was messed up. I couldn't sit. I couldn't drive. Couldn't sleep. If there was something on the floor, I couldn't pick it up. So I started going for acupuncture. Long story short, a friend of mine called Diamond Dallas Page, WCW wrestler, had started his own yoga called DDP Yoga. Mm-hmm. It was a combination of yoga and physiotherapy. From when he had blown out two discs, doctors said, your career is over, you need surgery. He said, I don't buy it. He started doing yoga, changed his whole life. Same thing as dancing. Yoga, like, whatever, but I'll try it. I'm in so much pain. After a couple weeks, it was a little better, a month a little bit better. After about 6 weeks, pretty much gone. In 3 months, disappeared. So that was another thing.
Wow.
And then the final thing was I was down to about 209 at that point, December of 2011, right before I was getting ready to go back. Went to Metallica 30th anniversary show, saw James Hetfield, friend of mine, except for I thought it was a dude trying to be James Hetfield because he was so skinny. And I said, James, what did you do? He's like, oh, I just started this caveman diet. I saw you like 3 months ago, and you were like huge. Caveman diet. All meat, vegetables, berries,
anything
almonds.
Anything you can find in the wild.
Everything natural.
Exactly. No processed food, no sugar, all that sort of stuff. I started doing that and went down to about 199 and have been that ever since. So now it's not a diet. It's my diet.
Right.
So the combination of all those things when I came back was like a whole new
body. It's a lifestyle.
It's a lifestyle. Wow. And I feel better than I ever have. And like you said, look in great shape and feel great and back feels great. So it was a real kind of midlife changing of what I was doing to kind of continue forward.
So the DDP yoga, I mean, it's more than strength and cardio almost? Or how would you describe
it? It's a little bit of everything, man. Like I said, like I think yoga over the next 5 or 10 years will just be the norm of what people do, like putting on a seatbelt or not smoking or wearing a condom. It's just like 10 years ago, people didn't do that. Now it's just a normal thing.
Good body maintenance.
It's a it's basically you're always locked in when you're doing the poses, so you're always like flexing. And always, so when you're finished, like you got a real body workout, not just for your core, but for everything. Like you can just really, you can get your heart rate to increase just by doing this.
So, I'm saying, so that key is just engaging all the muscles
exactly,
the whole time.
Exactly, constantly engaging, you know?
We had DDP in here about 6 months ago, and he, before the show went on, he put on a heart rate monitor and showed it was, you know, 60, 70 beats a minute. In about 10 seconds, he got his heart rate up to like 140 beats a minute. And it was unbelievable just by doing this.
Yeah, and then is he able to bring it back down that fast, too?
I don't remember, when you stop. Stop doing that. But yeah, he's, I mean, he's so into it and he's a super positive guy. So,
and now he's like the inspirational life story. Like, he's helping everybody.
Yeah. Oh
and,
my God.
I mean, like,
yeah.
You know, not to be a shelling, but if anybody has any problems or soreness, you got to try it because it'll change your life. I say it to everybody.
What do you think about what he's doing with Jake and Scott Hall?
That's amazing. I mean, those guys have been write offs probably, you know, in the Deadpool for years.
Mm-hmm.
And not really great guys to be around a lot of times because they were so caught up in their issues. But, you know, you want to see guys change their life around. If anybody can do it, Paige can do it. And it seems like he's done that with Jake. And hopefully he'll do it with Scott, too. Because if those guys hadn't done something, they're going to die.
Yeah.
And Paige knows because he's been there. He's been in the business and understands how you can get so far down. Inspirational guy. Like I said, I mean, I can't say enough for what he's done for me as far as, you know, changing the way that I feel. You know, even in the morning for years, when you get up in the morning, you'd be sore and like, oh, I'm so stiff. All that is gone. You know, so, you know, if anybody's thinking about trying something, you should try yoga, especially DDP yoga.
Yeah, I was thinking, I was thinking about starting up this week. I'm actually just coming off of an ankle injury, so I'm waiting.
Anything you have like that, might have knee problems, I go, suddenly it disappears. It, like, opens you up. It's really weird. Wow, I'm not that type of guy that's going to go, this will change your life, but seriously.
So I just started wrestling about a year and a half ago, so I've been thinking about doing it myself and getting into it early.
A lot of guys are really getting into it. Even the WWE, there's half a dozen guys, there are 12 guys that are doing it. Mm-hmm. You know?
So now doing it on your own with a DVD versus being in a studio with someone to correct you?
No, it's great. Like, you know, the biggest thing when you're on the road, whether I'm with the WWE or whether I'm on tour with Fozzy or whatever it may be, you know, filming Robot Combat League, sometimes you go to your trailer, you got 45 minutes, there's no time to go to a gym or find a gym or even change. Just put a towel on the ground and do it. And that's the best thing, too. You can do it on a tour bus. You can do it. We were on tour this summer on the Uproar tour of all the amphitheaters. Just went out into the grass besides the bus and just did it there. Like, wherever there's an open space, it's perfect. It really, like, I'd never go to the gym anymore or lift weights. I just
you don't weight train at all anymore?
No, I might do some core training when I'm at home with a personal trainer. But other than that, it's just yoga, and I'll do some push-ups and ab roller. So that's about it.
Oh, ab rollers are ridiculous.
You guys got to use the ab rocket, which I've been in the infomercial for. I mean, it got me in the best shape of my life.
I saw you somewhere. it wasn't just in the lollipop field.
All right. On the cover of Monopoly.
We've talked about all these championships. Your career spanned over years and amazing accolades and success. You're obviously a future WWE Hall of Famer. What do you think about this year's Hall of Fame class? I mean, we got in Bruno Sammartino, a wrestler who some people thought should have been one of the first to be inducted. Mm-hmm. What goes through your mind?
And Backlund as well.
And Trish Stratus,
the
Foley.
Two biggest, I think, omissions that I knew of.
To me, like, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame in music and wrestling had three major omissions. In wrestling, it was Bruno Sammartino, Bob Backlund, and Randy Savage. Mm-hmm. In music, it's Kiss, Rush, and Deep Purple, along with so many others. But if you cannot have a Hall of Fame without those three entities in each one. Thankfully, Rush is going in this year. Still got to get Kiss and Purple in there. And Backlund and Sammartino in the same class. Right. I think what you just mentioned, yes, Sammartino, huge. But people are forgetting just how huge Backlund was, too, and the fact that he needs to be in there as well. So it's going to be an amazing, amazing night because you got two legitimate guys that going in there will be completely legitimizing that Hall of Fame. And also the fact that Backlund will be second from the top or third from the top that's even almost a travesty. But right. it's, you know, right. it's going to be so packed. And Mick Foley, too.
Yeah. He's and got, Trish as well.
Yeah, lots of really legendary names.
Another yoga practitioner.
Yeah, yeah, she's got her own yoga too. So, yeah, but yeah, it's going to be a lot of fun.
I think between those two, it's the three longest reigns ever, right? San Martino has 1 and 3, I think, and Backlund's 2.
Yeah, like that's how it used to be back in those days. The guys would be champion for like 6 years. 19 years or whatever,
Do you have a lit-up tuxedo jacket ready for the night?
Yeah, it's funny because people always say that, like, you know, making bad jokes like that. But yeah, I'm not Robert Redford in The Electric Horseman. I just wear that. And also, too, it's funny, backstage at WWE, like, they'll be like, oh, can we just film a backstage thing for the app? Yeah, sure. You put your jacket on, turn the lights. I'm like, no. The lights don't go on unless I'm in the arena. That's the only way you do it. You know, Gene Simmons doesn't spit blood backstage for your enjoyment. He does it when he's the demon on stage. And that's what it's like for the jacket. That signals that, you know, it's time, it's go time. The lights are on, the show has begun.
So it's like your superhero costume.
It kind of is. You have to play a character when you do this. I mean, when you do anything where you go out in front of an audience, whether it be music or wrestling or, you know, doing a play, or, you know, Dancing with the Stars, anything where there's a live audience in a performance, nobody wants to see, you know, Chris Irvin walk out there. You know, you got to see, there's got to be an amp up. You know, Ozzy walks around like he can barely walk. And as soon as I've seen him do it, as soon as he crosses the sight line where people can see him, he'll shuffle up to it and then boom, here's Ozzy. Go crazy, throw the buckets of water, sing the songs, thank you, God bless you, good night, walk back off and completely go back into, you know, hunched up spider mode.
Right.
Because that's part of it. People want to see the character, larger than life entity that you've come to expect.
That reminds me of when the Star Wars films got, you know, the new ones came out years ago already, when Yoda had a big fight scene and everyone was like, Yoda's a worker, because he was all hobbling with his cane and then he had this massive fight where he's flying all over and he finishes it and he just starts hobbling off again.
That's cool, man. Yeah, you need to have that. I mean, that's what show business is all about.
Chris Jericho, fun fact I found online.
What's a fun fact? Uh-oh.
Kids have Superman pajamas. Superman has Chris Jericho pajamas.
Ooh. That's true. Yeah, yeah. Gave me some royalties on that. Damn Clark Kent, a couple skid marks in him, too.
All right, we talked about Bruno Sammartino being in the Hall of Fame, one of the longest reigning champion, a true legend of the game. Last night on Raw, WWE debuted their new championship belt. What are your opinions on the look of it?
You know, it's funny. When I first came in here and sat down, like, I wasn't sure what show we'd be talking about. And then you were talking about, we're doing after the show of Raw. And I was like, well, when was Raw? And they're like, wait, that was just last night. But it seems like forever because we were in New Orleans and I flew in this morning. I've been working all day. So it's like Raw. Like, that was a week ago. How untimely is this? But, yeah, I mean, it's cool. I mean, I think I never was a real fan of making the personalized titles. Mm-hmm. You know, they had the smoking skull or the Brahma bull or this was the spinner belt. It's like, I still like that classic eagle championship that Hogan had in like 88.
That seems to be the common consensus.
And I even had that too when I won the Undisputed Championships. It was the Ric Flair WCW title and the, for lack of a better term, the Hogan Classic WWE title. And I had to carry both of those titles around for 4 months. Which wasn't, I mean, don't get me wrong, I'm not complaining, but when you go through, you have to carry them with you because you don't want to take the chance somebody's going to steal it from you. And you'd always go through the security and some guy would take it like, oh, you some kind of boxer? Or wrestling. Oh, hey, Johnny, look, he's got two of them. Come on over.
Everyone's taking pictures with them.
7 o'clock in the morning, you're just like, just let me go through. So, and then it was actually funny. This morning, I went to check my bag, and it was because I'm going to Australia tomorrow night to do a Fozzie tour, and the bag was too heavy. So I had my jacket, one of the jackets in there, because I have to use it down under for this spoken word thing I'm doing, long story short. So I had to take the jacket out, but I didn't have a bag to put it in. So I just asked the lady if she had a garbage bag. She had this big plastic garbage bag. So I put my big fancy jacket in a garbage bag, put it through security, and one guy is like, Jericho, man, that's your jacket? You can't keep it in a plastic bag. It's not usually in a plastic bag, man. But so anyway, so I had these two titles. I carried them for 4 months, and they kept saying they were going to get a new title, and then finally they got a new title the night after I lost the Undisputed Championship. So it's cool that they're bringing it in. Apparently, I think like this one has like Brahma bulls on the side.
Yeah.
But those plates are detachable. So whoever wins,
little screws on.
Yeah. So some, like, you know, if Cena wins, it'll be a, you know, Cena thing or
WWE.com put a story up today about the journey of this belt of it being made. I guess it's a year and a half in the making for this one. They said the original prototype was like 50 pounds, and CM Punk was like, "I'm not carrying
it's
that."
It looks heavy. Yeah. It looks heavy.
Well, and then here's a fun fact: you can't say belt in the WWE.
Title.
Vince hates the word belt. It's a title.
Or strap, I heard as well.
Strap, he said too. Belts, you buy at JCPenney's, and strap is 270s wrestling. So it's got to be the title.
Yeah.
Or the championship belt.
I think the new belt's smart too from a merchandising aspect as well. If you sell the replica belts? Guy, you can sell now those little the side plates.
Yeah, actually, they've already done
it's
that.
It's already available.
Hasbro or whatever, you can buy the championship title, Vince, I didn't say belt, and then you can go right next to it and they'll have the accessories.
Awesome.
And get your John Cena or your
Rock.
Get your Funaki, put it on there, whatever.
Because there's no name on it anymore, I think, right?
That's just it. The side plates are
going
to be. Whatever it may be.
It almost looks like a championship ring, like an NFL ring. Almost. It's kind of cool.
Jericho's side plates would be like that.
Or probably some Y2J thing or whatever. Yeah. Who knows?
All right, mentioned you're going to Australia with Fozzy. Caspa, one of our listeners in Sydney, said Australians in Sydney are waiting for him to rock, and he's so pumped for the concert. So some of our listeners are already lining up and getting ready.
It's huge. It's this tour called Soundwave, and it's like a 30 or 40 band stadium festival tour. So everybody flies over, like Metallica and Blink-182 and Linkin Park, Bullet for My Valentine, Anthrax, Slayer, Fozzy, like all these bands. And then we all fly over there, not together, but, you know, everyone shows up, and then they have it all figured out. It's some huge undertaking where we do stadium show in Adelaide, stadium show in Perth, Sydney, Brisbane, Melbourne. And it's still blowing my mind. Like, how could you orchestrate something that big where everybody's coming from another country? You know, so it's going to be I just got an invitation to go to Metallica's party that they're having on Friday night. It's called Put Another Shrimp on the Metallica Barbie. It should be cool. They're having a big party for
that's
the
one of
bands.
Those bands I've never seen live that I need to see before they end.
Yeah,
it's Metallica.
Absolutely. Yeah. They're an amazing band. Very classy, too. Like I said, putting on a party for every band member that's going over there. So it's going to be cool, man. I'm really excited about it.
Do you have fans that specifically know you as the lead singer of Fozzy or specifically from Dancing with the Stars?
Yeah. That's one thing I was talking about with branding. It's like I have, you know, there's obviously the cool thing is I have Jericho fans. They just they follow me whatever I do because they know if I'm putting my name on something that I think it's great. And if I didn't think it was great, I wouldn't do it. So there's obviously a lot of Jericho fans from wrestling, a lot of just Fozzy fans, a lot of Dance with the Stars fans. I used to have a lot of VH1 fans just because I used to do a lot of work for them. So there's a lot of different, you know, people. John Mayer, he came up to me wearing a Stormtrooper outfit for whatever reason and just started, like, talking to me, and I was like not really understanding what he was saying, and then I realized he was quoting some of the scenes that I had in the movie MacGruber, and it's his favorite movie of all time. And it's like, you know, you're the guy from MacGruber, and I was like, yes, John, I am. So, he put on his helmet and walked away.
All right, talking about music, one of our listeners, Heyman Guy, says John Bon Jovi or David Lee Roth.
Roth, man. It's got to be Roth.
Say that one.
I was never much of a Bon Jovi guy. I'm Van Halen guy.
Seems a little too soft, I'd say.
Yeah, I mean, I'd appreciate it, but yeah, more Roth. Roth was dirtier.
Yeah, no, you definitely have like a unique style of performing on stage with Fozzy and your voice. Now, I'm a metal guy myself. I'm a seasonal metal guy, like in the winter when it starts
he
to get cold.
He looks like a real headbanger, doesn't he?
Oh my god. I've been at some shows where there are people like, what the hell are you doing here?
Are you a narc?
Exactly. Get out of here. I've been to a Man of War concert in Baltimore, which was freaking. I was like front row too, and the guy's
sold,
like, what
dude,
the?
I'm sold.
Oh, Man of War.
If you're going to Man of War concerts, you are a true metalhead. For sure.
So sweet. But now, when you first came out with Fozzy, the first thing I thought of was, are you familiar with Ed Guy?
Yeah.
Now, I don't know, like, your voice has changed a little bit through the years, but right early on, I was like, oh my god, he sounds like Ed Guy. This is so cool.
That's funny, man. Yeah, Tobias Sammet is the singer of Ed Guy, and his biggest hero was Michael Kiske from Helloween, and that's one of my big idols, obviously. And I used to sing a lot higher. I don't know, when I first started, I listened back to some of those old songs, and it's like, oh my god, it's like super high. But yeah, as you progress as a singer, it's like anything else. You take some time to find your identity and what you do best and where your wheelhouse is. And at this point in time, really can just nail it and punch it wherever I want to do it. But back then, it was singing way higher than probably I should have, just because I could. And right. Then you realize, well, you got to sing these songs live. And if you're doing 3 or 4 shows a week, you can't sing like that all the time. So you got to kind of bring it down a bit and find your peaks and valleys. But that's interesting. Ed Guy, I've never heard that before.
Yeah. And then it's every time. Like, you never cease to, like, when you debuted with the David Lee Roth, like, style thing, like, I was just like, dude, every time this man Jericho just, like, I always think, oh, he just...
I actually got that pose right there from Michael Jackson in 93. I saw him on, I believe it was the Black and White Tour, maybe History Tour, Black and White Tour. And he came out onto the stage, he came up from underneath, and just stood there like that with his back to the crowd like this for, like, 5 minutes.
Yeah, I remember.
Milk. Didn't move. Yeah. And people were just like, ah. And that's what my idea was when I came into the WWE in 99. I said, you know, I'm going to come, I'm going to stand there, and I'm just going to stand there for as long as I can and just feel it and milk it. Just total Michael Jackson groove. I just thought that was the coolest idea ever. And then when he turned around, he didn't even move either. He just stood there. And then after about another 3 minutes, he just clicked his head like, and every move,
Hands down, like, the biggest pop I've ever heard in wrestling was your
cool
debut.
Man.
Oh,
my
pop God. At the Rumble a few weeks ago.
Oh, my God.
That's probably the second. It could even be the biggest. I'm not
it was
sure.
Electric.
It's a combination of the two.
Yeah,
and how did that one not
get
leaked?
That.
So
there's
always leaks of that. Oh, those videos are Jericho's. Oh, he's coming back. No leaks at all on that one. I mean, you pulled the wool over on everyone and truly made it a surprise.
Well, and that's why people reacted the way they did, because they honestly didn't know. It's like hit them total surprise. And in this day and age, to be able to pull something like that off is pretty rare, because there's so much, you know, online presence and social media. And nobody, I kept it so close to my vest. I think maybe 2 or maybe 3 people knew about it. And even when I got to the arena, there was a couple people in the office that knew, but there was people that didn't know that work in the WWE. He knew nothing about it until I walked out. And it was so orchestrated perfectly, like Royal Rumble, everyone's excited. First guy goes to the ring, who's number 2 going to be? And it's like this giant shock. And so I think people were legitimately, whether they liked Chris Jericho or not, they were just so excited about the fact that they were surprised at something. And that's what it was like when I was a kid. There was no internet or dirt sheets or whatever.
Did they intentionally leave that storyline open with you and Dolph Ziggler so that you could come back?
We didn't really know when I was going to come back, because, I mean, I left in 05 and didn't come back for 2.5 years. I left in 2010, didn't come back for 14 months or 16 months, whatever it was. But like I said, this time it just was there for me to come back in January, and it was only 4 months ago. It's funny, because when I was doing the Rumble, people were chanting, "You still got it," and I'm like, "Well, I never
45,
lost
yeah. Wait, but 45, yeah, but you didn't go, you did go 45 minutes or but something, which is like, an impressive feat."
Well, yeah, it's funny, because Vince afterwards said to me, "You know, you're in really good ring shape. How did you stay in such great shape? And you've been gone for 4 months." And I was like, "I don't know. I never thought about it until afterwards." I was like, 48 minutes, really?
Oh my God.
Are you kidding me?" But it's like I said, that's one of those moments. It was a really special night, and it was cool to be able to do that and to be able to stay in there for that long at that level.
And surprises are just so important in wrestling, and we don't get to have them in today's age.
People want to spoil it.
ECW pay-per-views became so exciting to fans, because every pay-per-view you knew someone was going to show up that you didn't know. And there was always that element of, there's a moment that I can't miss, because...
Yeah. And I think that's the thing, is that one of the bad things about internet and social media is that people feel very entitled. They want to know everything before it happens, just because it makes them feel like, oh, I know what's going on. I know everything. And like, if I go see a movie, I don't want to know what happens at the end of the movie before I see it. I want to see it unfold the way that the filmmakers and the director wrote it and filmed it. So I don't know, understand why sometimes people would even want to know that Jericho's coming back. Why would you want to know that? As a fan, it's like, it's fun to be legitimately surprised. That's like, oh man, this is great. So I've always been that way. And people are like, well, was it hard for you to keep a secret? It's like, no. You kidding me? I love that stuff. I love being the manipulator and the master of puppets who can dictate people's emotions. That's part of the fun of doing what I do.
When did Dolph actually find out that you were back? Was it like right before? Did you guys get some time to talk over?
I had to go to a meeting with all the Royal Rumble guys so they knew what was going on, because I was in there for too long. You can't, you know, not tell the guys who are in the match. That's just detrimental to the match.
Right.
But even then, when I was sitting there with all the guys, I'm like, somebody here is going to, you know, stooge it off. And nobody did.
So everybody in the Rumble knew that.
Oh, yeah.
So all 30 people knew.
Yeah.
Oh, wow.
We had a big team meeting beforehand. And like, here he is. And I walked out.
And no one snitched.
Nobody snitched because that was 2-3 hours before the show. There was plenty of time for someone to let the cat out of the bag, but nobody did. So I give nothing but credit to anybody who knew, who didn't say anything. It's like, that's the way it should be, man. You know?
It's like not spoiling the ending of The Sixth Sense.
Yeah. You know? That's right. It was Donnie Wahlberg was the guy.
Yeah. You know that, right? I still did not know that. I did not know that it was Donnie Wahlberg until I watched the credits of that and said, where was Donnie Wahlberg in this movie?
Skinny little underwear guy, yeah.
All right, you talked about having some of the best matches in this recent run. You've been having amazing matches with CM Punk, an amazing feud with Dolph Ziggler. Who's your favorite rival to wrestle of all time?
I don't know, it's hard. I mean, Shawn Michaels probably is the first in my head. Rock was always great. We had a huge rivalry about 10 years ago now. Those matches were always amazing. Rey Mysterio, I think I had our program we had in 2009 was one of the best. Quite a few guys. Ultimo Dragon, if you want to go old school.
Oh, wow.
You know, a lot of...
And he used to have to carry tons of belts in his luggage, championships in his luggage.
He had nine of them.
That's a heavy carry-on right there.
But yeah, Cena was great. There's certain guys that when you just show up and you see yourself across from them, you just know it's going to be an easy night. A lot of fun.
Bringing up The Rock, any chance we're going to see you go one-on-one with the Great One more time?
I would love to. I mean, it'd be a real cool, I don't even want to say nostalgia, but kind of we haven't done anything.
Just in a mega event. It's a mega star event. It's a mega star match.
I mean, I think if you look at guys who can really go toe-to-toe with Rock on a microphone sense, I think I'm one of the few that can do that. So
I'd love to see that again.
How about a movie role with you in The
one
Rock?
One of my favorite promos of all time is your debut against you and The Rock were
That was great. Yeah. You know? But yeah, I mean, CM Punk was great to work with. I mean, there's a lot of guys. I mean, at this level... I worked with The Shield last night. Those guys were awesome.
Oh, yeah.
Daniel Bryan last week was great. You know, but I think probably Shawn Michaels is the one that I had the best time with.
So if Shawn Michaels is also, you've written in the book, in-ring influence for sure of yours, who are some of your mic skill, promo work influences?
Just me, man. Yeah, I just... when I wasn't good at it, they used to have this thing called the box in WCW. You would go and they would do localized, like, you know, we're coming to San Bernardino and I'm you know, I got you, Lollipop Guild, and you're going to, you know, get the lollipop beating of a lifetime or whatever. And then I would just sit in the back and watch all the guys do those. And then one day somebody didn't show up and they said, hey, do you want to try one? And I tried it and it was awful. Next day it's like, well, someone didn't show up. You want to try two? And that's just sort of coming. You got to have confidence. You can't try and copy anybody. You have to be yourself and believe in what you're doing. It's like, you know, being I was a groundling for a year. I guess I'm still a groundling. Once a groundling, always a groundling. But to make improv comedy work, you have to commit to it. And that's what you have to do with any character that you play, whether it's wrestling or whether you're singing a song or anything where you're performing. If you don't believe it, no one else will believe it. If you are committed to it 1,000%, people will buy into it and they'll get into it as well.
Yeah.
Fantastic. Sure. This guy's got it all. Let's transition out of the wrestling and go to what you were really here to push. Robot Combat League, debuting next Tuesday night on Sci-Fi, 10 p.m. Eastern. This show looks incredible. This is like this is the television version of Real Steel.
Yeah,
and I hate to admit it; it's one of those embarrassing things in my life. But I mean, I cry watching.
I love Real Steel, man.
I mean, Real Steel's fun. I mean, that's the story. I mean, even though it's robots as an athlete, there's a story and heart in there.
It's amazing,
and this is real life.
And that's the thing about it is, I mean, you know, whenever you have certain things come across your desk, it's like, okay, well, this is interesting. This is lame. This could be all right. And like you see one for an 8-foot-tall giant fighting robot show, and it's like, well, how could you not want to be
a new tournament?
We're
going to a clip.
I was going to toss, but they jumped the gun.
Cut off by my own clip.
And the search for a champion is underway.
That's supposed to be my thing.
In a competition unlike anything you've seen before.
What is going on? Bedlam in the arena.
A transformation of man and machine. As giant mechanical wonders are piloted by their human counterparts. 12 teams from all walks of life have been brought together to compete for the ultimate prize.
I'm a two-time Olympian.
I'm a race car driver.
I work for NASA.
I'm a professional MMA fighter and the daughter of George Lucas.
Thank you for coming. I love you.
Tiger Lucas is on there, huh? Is that her
All name? Bonded to their own impressive metal warrior.
Oh, my God.
With proper training.
This is a fully hydraulic humanoid robot capable of exerting 2,000 pounds of force.
Now, you want to step in with that?
Okay.
Oh! And team chemistry.
Uppercut! Uppercut!
Back!
You can't give up.
No, we're not giving up.
Kyle, stop!
We're in big trouble right now.
It's like I'm literally fighting for my life out here.
Bug.
They're going off.
They are going off. Sparks. Oil. I mean, this is phenomenal.
It's like that clip wasn't finished.
Yeah. It wasn't finished. I thought we were going to run the commercial clips. That's missing like, audio track.
It's not even my voice. It's like, who sent that out? But you get the gist of basically what's going on. And like you said, I mean, this is real steel, but with actual robots. No CGI, no Hollywood magic. And each robot has its own character, has its own vibe. And they beat the crap out of each other, man. Like I said, all that stuff that you see of the hydraulic fluid spewing all over the place, the sparks, the fire, the smoke. There's one robot got decapitated. One got amputated his arm. The other one got literally cut in two. I mean, it's like the beginning of Saving Private Ryan, but with robots.
Do you call up Foley and be like, my robot show is better than yours?
Well, the thing is, you can't even...
It's a different era.
It's not even a different era. It's like those battle bots were like Chihuahuas, and these are like Godzilla.
Absolutely.
Are people huge in them? Or?
No, it's an exoskeleton. You can see, you put the exoskeleton on. When you punch, the robot punches. Okay. When you duck, the robot ducks. So there's a two-person team. One is kind of the robotech that controls the leg movement and also is in control of the repairs of the robot. The other one is the robojump. Jockey, that's the MMA fighters, the Olympic athletes, the army sergeants. So it's not just about the robots, too. It's about the strategy that the two people use, and then also making it from a two-point team to a three-point team, including the robot. And like you mentioned, you really do start feeling sympathy for these robots because they're so beautifully made and they're so well, like I said, they move fast, they punch fast, and when you see them beating the crap out of each other, it's like Lamborghinis in a demolition derby.
Oh, wow.
You know, it hurts your feelings. But the first thing that I thought when I was in the arena and they brought the robot out, if it hadn't stopped walking, I would have turned and ran away. Like, it was that intimidating. It was like the Terminator when they go to the future and they're stepping on the human skulls. That's what these things are like. They could literally kill you. 2,000 PSIs per punch. If that hits you in the face, it will knock your head off. So we've now created robots that can kill humans, and in 10 years when they take over the planet, you'll know you saw it on a robot combat.
Do not try this at home.
We learned nothing from Terminator.
Who made the robots? Were they different teams that make them, or was it all the production team that made them?
You saw the guy on there, beard and kind of short hair. His name is Mark Satrakian, and he built all of the robots. He's like a Hollywood animatronic expert, and he built six robots, and each there's 12 different skins or 12 different suits of armor where you have the 12 different characters. Scorpio, Commander, Steampunk, Robohammer, Drone Strike, and each character of the robot has a different... pros and cons. Like Scorpio had a fist with a blade on it, and that was the one that when it hit Commander in the area, the abdominal area, basically split him in two. And it's like you see something like this. It was not orchestrated. We're like, well, here's the fight where the robot gets split in two. Here's the fight where the robot gets decapitated. It's like each fight got more intense than the last as the teams learned how to work with each other because they didn't know each other. We put them together, and as they learned how to use the robot. And to me, it was like being like a snowboarder, or like you put this board on your feet and you're starting to go down the hill and it feels like the most foreign, awkward thing. But then once you learn how to do it, it becomes an extension of yourself. That's what these robots were like. Once they started learning how to work with the robot, how to move it, how to dodge, the strategy of the boxing, then you saw those teams going on to the next round.
So did you see some teams that weren't as good at first that then got better and maybe became one of the top teams once they figured something out?
Absolutely. The very first round, we have the first seed pitted against the 16th seed as far as some drills that they did at the beginning, and the 16th seed won.
Oh, wow.
So there was really... you know, it wasn't about like, okay, you know, you put like Stephen Hawking and Schwarzenegger circa 1984 together, it doesn't necessarily mean they're going to win. Just because the one guy's super smart, the other guy's super huge, mm-hmm. it didn't matter. I mean, we had a 5 foot tall girl who was beating the crap out of some of the other bigger guys because she figured out how to use her robot and had good chemistry with her. Her pilot, basically.
Did probably some people that are good at video games, like the Wii and the new movement stuff would
finding
help,
finding the
I would
rhythm
think.
Of the
yeah.
delay also.
One,
I'm sure there's
one of the fighters was a video game champion, and she was really good at kind of figuring out how to do it. But once again, video games, you're watching a game. Here you're actually playing it. It's very virtual, you know, what's going on.
Did George Lucas's daughter have, like, an upper hand at all, or was she on the same playing field
she
as
was
everyone
on the
else?
Same, like I said, too, like, you know, you grew up around this. It's like, well, it wasn't really robots, you know? But, she was... No special treatment.
Okay.
No, not at all. And the thing that was cool about it was, you know, George showed up, as you saw, and I was, you know, first of all, I go on set first day, and they're asking me, you know, this is what you do, and here's this guy, and here's this guy, and I'm like... Is that George Lucas over there? They're like, why, yes, it is. I'm like, could you go introduce me to him? I'm like, oh, my God. three people I met that I freaked out on. Wayne Gretzky, Ozzy, and George Lucas. So, and then I was talking to him. It's like, you know, how is this for you to see, like, these ideas that you had 45, 50 years coming to life? And he said, if you look at science fiction movies and TV shows and comic books from that era, most of the stuff that they predicted have come true.
Absolutely.
Look at Star Trek.
Star Trek, the communicators talking to something that's your cell phone.
Cell phone.
Or looking into a screen and seeing somebody talking to Skype. Or
Dick,
having
Dick Tracy video phone, you know, watch phone.
A robot that talks and thinks. Surrey, where's the nearest McDonald's? You know, and like I said, now robots that are actually fighting each other, and I'm sure 10 years from now we'll look back at these robots and say, oh, how archaic.
I mean, these look like the most cutting-edge robots we've ever seen. Yeah. Absolutely.
We have never seen anything like this in the history of TV. And that's why the production for the show was really stressful because we didn't know. Nobody knew. Not the guys who created it, not the producers, not the head of the network, not me. We just had to go with the flow. If a robot gets punched in the stomach and all the actuators that hold it together fall apart and it falls in two, how do we fix that for tomorrow's show? Take a day off, take 2 days off. You know, so it was a real learning process. Mm-hmm. But now that we're seeing it on screen, it's an amazing visual, and you really become attached to these robots and realize, like this, you mentioned BattleBots. Like I said, that's a joke. That's like little vacuum cleaners that you stick on the floor.
It's the Roomba.
Yeah. I can't even say.
Yeah, these
like,
are real.
These are real, and the technology for this just blew my mind from the moment I walked on set.
When does it start? Is it this week?
February 26th. Yeah,
next Tuesday. February 26th.
And actually, if you have Roku, you can get it on the Roku app as of today, and also on Xbox. It's available as of today.
What's available?
You can watch the first episode.
Oh, okay.
Through Sci-Fi's app.
I'm going to go download that when I get home.
Yeah.
How heavy are the exoskeletons that they're fighting with? Because I got to imagine that's a lot of weight to be.
Yeah, it's like they're kind of suspended. So they're kind of on sprint.
You don't have full weight on you.
Yeah, but like I said, you have to be precise, and you have to know when you punch. There's not much of a delay, but there's a little delay. And also, if you're going here, the robot might go here. So it took a while. Like I remember watching the first fight, and all the other contestants are watching, and I felt bad for the first fight because this is the first time ever. We've never seen this. There was no practice fights. There was no testing. It was all just here. You go, guys. Go for it. And all of us were kind of diving into this uncharted water all at the same time. And now when you see it back. And like I said, being in the fight was so exciting because each one was more intense than the last. It was like if they can get what we're watching live, if you can transfer that onto the screen, this is going to be a hit. And they've done that and more.
Did you ever try to do the
I used
punching?
The exoskeleton a
really?
Couple times, and it felt very strange. You know, I wanted to get a sense of it just to see, you know, what I could do with it. And then even just the people that were the robotechs, you know, some people might call them nerds. I call them really super smart people. They were the ones that would come down. Like, there's 3 2-minute rounds. At the end of each round, you have to assess the damage to your robot and see if you can repair it enough to continue in the next round. And you have half an hour to do that. If you don't, you lose a point. And if you know, I think there's 2 hours after that. If you can't repair the arm that's hanging there, but your robot can walk, you got to go back out into the fight with one arm. So as it continues and progresses, you see how people react. How do you fight with one arm? How do you fight with no arms? One of them had no arms, just using its head, you know, and this hydraulic fluid is spewing all over the place. It was just carnage. It really was. And just at the end of it, you're just so excited and so into it. Like, oh, this is the greatest thing I've ever seen. We'll see you next week on Robot Combat League. And it was just like, wow. That was really rad. So I think once people get a chance to really get into this and understand what it is, I think it's going to be really, really exciting for a lot of different demographics.
Fans, you see the excitement on his face. You hear it in his voice. You could tune in next Tuesday on Sci-Fi Network for the debut premiere of Robot Combat League. I said the same thing. Robot Combat League.
Was it Robot Combat League? RCL. It's a tongue twister.
Is it one fight per show, or are there multiple
sometimes
fights?
Sometimes there was two fights a show. Sometimes there was one fight a show. First episode, we're setting it up, getting to know everybody, and there's one fight.
Okay. And it's about an hour show or
hour
30
show,
minutes?
Yeah.
Okay.
1 hour show.
Awesome.
Fans, tune in. Tune in to Raw. Tune in to SmackDown. Tune in to Main Event. We've had an amazing hour here with Chris Jericho.
It's been an hour?
It's already been. I wish we had more time because I got like three more pages of questions from fans, but we don't want to take too much of your time. We appreciate you coming in, man. This has been awesome.
I had some questions I wanted to ask you guys.
Can we be on the highlight reel?
That'll be next part two of the interview.
Go ahead and ask.
He says, go ahead and ask. They'll run that. Ask away.
What kind of wax do you use to get that mustachio?
I use Axe's pomade, so
that's great, man.
Purple container.
How long have you had that?
It's going about a year. So our listeners know, I got offered a deal last February with WWE, and when I was looking at the NXT site, no one had anything like this, so I started growing it. Unfortunately, my deal got pulled, but I haven't been able to cut it yet. I figure it's too hard to snip it off.
Chicks dig it.
Chicks dig the stash a little bit, and then, you know, and you got to do a little merchandising with the mustache rings.
Man,
and
that's it. The bow tie. Yo,
now Cody Rhodes copied him.
I know. See what happens?
Cody saw me at TV, and now is no.
Welcome to wrestling.
That's the way it works. How many of your 1,004 holds have been stolen?
I haven't been wrestling for a while. I only know about 37 now at this point. But at one point, I was really good.
Fantastic. All right, we're going to wrap it up. I'm Ryan Katz on behalf of Kathy Kelly, Ryan Clum, and Josh Padgett. We've been talking with Chris Jericho. Tune in next week. Check us out on iTunes. Check us out on YouTube. Bye-bye, Birdie.
Woo!
From Bing.com, executive producers Maria Menounos, Kevin Undergaro, Phil Svitek, and the entire AfterBuzz TV staff, we would like to thank you for listening to the AfterBuzz TV network. To watch or listen to other after shows and post comments or questions, be sure to visit AfterBuzzTV.com. I'm Sir Richard Wentworth, and this has been a presentation of AfterBuzz TV.
Buzz later!
The views expressed herein are those of the hosts only and do not necessarily reflect the views of AfterBuzz TV or its owners or principals.